Hello and welcome to Beauty Inside Out. I'm your host, Kimberly Snyder, nutritionist, wellness expert, and author. On this podcast, I share my experiences, insights, and knowledge with you on health, beauty, personal development, and wellness. Every week, we have interviews with amazing pioneers in their fields. So joining me in the conversation every week is also my dear friend, Tony, who is a health researcher out of Stanford. Hey, beauties, welcome back. I hope you guys have had an amazing weekend. I'm here with our amazing Tony. Hey, T.
Hi, how's it going?
Thanks for being here with me and the beauties. Today, guys, we're going to be talking about a hot topic in the world of nutrition and something that you guys may wonder about sometimes. It's talked about in the media, and I don't like this word, T, but it's the one that's used, so we will use it as well here in this context, and it's about cheat days.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I don't like the word cheat is because it kind of has this shameful connotation, like you're doing something wrong.
Yes.
Versus, you know, we very much talk about not trying to be perfect, not trying to strive for 100%, but more of an 80-20 rule, having flexibility, making this a lifestyle, not a diet.
Mm-hmm.
But again, just take the word out of your mouth.
Yes.
We know what it means to kind of go off course a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some interesting research now connecting cheating with actually some benefits and even weight loss.
Yes.
So tell us how this works, T, because it sounds really counterintuitive.
Yeah, and some people, another word, like I've been, another word that's emerging kind of in the diet space is spike.
I like that
so
better.
So it's like spike day.
Yeah, that's better.
You might eat a little bit more, or you might have a little more calories or more density than you normally do. And the reason I like spike too, like that as a word instead of cheat, is that like spike, if you're thinking about it more in just in terms of like amount of food or calories or density or whatever, is that you can kind of still stay within your parameters. It doesn't mean you have to go eat like horrible things like Oreos and soda and all that dairy.
Yeah, if you don't have dairy, like all of a sudden you're having dairy. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't mean go totally off.
No, it doesn't mean totally go off. It just means you can have like, you can eat a little bit more or eat things maybe that are not like your daily staples that like allow you to feel really good or that are like part of your normal routine that are really like optimized and dialed in for how you feel. So I think that's a really good just like word and paradigm shift is to like every once in a while. And that's what the research really shows is that one of the reasons why spiking once in a while, and again, it doesn't have to be a whole day. It could just be a single meal where maybe like you eat a little bit more than you normally would, or you eat like some denser, you know, and again, it could be within a beauty detox context, like gluten-free pizza or some gluten-free pancakes or whatever, like things that we would mm-hmm. consider just, you know, beauty detox friendly, but just not like every day, you know, things that we not eat every single day, but like having those kind of spikes.
What will it do to your hormones? Like how will it help with weight loss?
Okay. So what the research shows is that when we adhere to like one diet exactly, like very strictly, and there's benefits to that, but then the one downside is that a lot of times what you see is metabolic rate kind of
for a long time.
For a long period of time, your metabolic rate can go down and down and down. So your metabolism is getting a little bit slower. And then at the same time, sometimes depending on like the level of restrictiveness of the diet, like your ghrelin will start going up more and more. And
like so you're doing like no carb.
Yeah,
like
really extreme. Exactly.
Like no
ketogenic
grain, no
or
carb.
Like some of these like really more extreme diets that are out there right now. And so what happens is then metabolism is going down, hunger is going up, 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 and then there ends up being this like crazy backlash, like binge, kind of going off the diet and then going, and then, you know, basically with a slower metabolism and a lot more hunger and a lot more eating, you just gain a lot of weight.
You just get off. So that's not a spike. That's just getting off altogether.
Yeah, that's like yo-yo dieting and crashing.
Versus like what the distinction here is, you're staying to the program. Let's say you're staying on beauty detox. You keep your morning ritual. You're having your glow and green smoothie. You're, you know, food combining. You're having our basic recipes, gluten-free, quinoa, veggies, like all these salads, all these different things. And then let's say for dinner, you want to have, you know, you eat a bunch of coconut ice cream.
Yes.
Or in my case yesterday, we're testing all the recipes in the book. I had a ton of cookies.
Yeah.
Gluten-free and vegan cookies.
Yeah.
But still a lot of cookies.
Exactly.
But then, you know, today I'm back on track. Well, I did have a lot of brownies because we're doing a lot of recipe testing. But we're just saying it's like spikes versus being off and staying off for weeks.
Exactly. And there's a lot of really interesting. So we've already discussed like the metabolic rate and the ghrelin optimization, but some other benefits to this are the psychological and emotional. So when they researched people and they did people like where they had like periodic kind of like spikes in their diet versus people that were like strictly adhering the whole time, when they asked them like about their level of confidence in being able to like stick to it and their emotional satisfaction, it was much higher when they were allowed to kind of have like that free meal or spike, you know, kind of day or meal or whatever, like that they had intermittently like built into it, where when it was like had to be perfect and flawless all the time, their level of confidence and emotional satisfaction, they just didn't think that they could maintain it. So
it's so hard to try to be on all the time.
And so people would just perceive it could lead to self-sabotage, like where I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this. Because don't you see that a lot with people sometimes in diets? I think less so in our community because it's more of lifestyle. But I think a lot of times when people are doing diets, there's this like unconscious thing like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do that forever, all the time.
Right, so exactly. Like the confidence, like
I shouldn't
said.
Do it at all because I know
exactly.
I'm not going
to
like.
It's scary. It can feel scary.
Yeah, that's like that emotional and psychological aspect of it is also really nice. You don't have to be perfect. Like that if you go off one
and
day.
And you know that it's okay and it's actually going to help balance and kick things up a little bit.
Yeah, so it's really good.
Well, you know, again, T, the question I know a lot of you may be thinking is how much is too much before it does start gaining weight? Like in very definite terms, are we talking once a week?
So what seems to be ideal, like if you're an athlete, you could, and you're really like working out and you have like more metabolic kind of burning going on, like twice is okay. But from what I've seen in research, about once a week.
Like one meal a week.
Yeah.
One whole day.
No.
What about the theory of like a whole cheat day?
Yeah.
And then they're like really strict the other days.
Exactly.
It's not really a lifestyle.
Exactly. Then that starts to get into like extremes.
That's what I've seen too, where people are like no carbs all week or like something that doesn't we don't recommend, and it isn't a natural form of eating because we know we need carbohydrates, we need protein, we need fat, we need all the macronutrients. So you don't feel that need to have a whole day.
Yes.
It's more like, oh, you know, I really feel like eating this coconut ice cream or these chips or these whatever. I like those cauliflower wings, tea, and they're fried. That is like, okay, there's that restaurant that we like, Sage.
Yes.
And so I love the nachos, you know, with corn chips and they're fried. But, you know, that's just like, okay, like I'm having this for this meal this week, but it's not a full day.
Yes.
I feel like I was going to explode if I did a whole day.
Yeah, me too. Like I can't do a full day because like my digestion will just like after one big meal like that.
I'll feel horrible.
Yeah, I'll kind of like it'll get too slow. But yeah, like exactly. And I think what happens, and I've talked to a lot of people who do this kind of this once a day, like one meal a week kind of thing, is that, or, you know, not once a day, but one meal a week where they have kind of more freedom, is that they really look forward to that. And that allows them like throughout the week, as they're kind of like, they're feeling good, they're doing their normal diet, their normal routine. They're like, they never feel like, oh my God, I can never have this thing I love or whatever. Oh, I really love rice or whatever. I mean, rice is beauty tics friendly, but like some people, they have things that they love and they're not like daily foods, but they need to know that you can have those things once in a while.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's, you know, it backs up even more though. Progress, Not Perfection.
Yes, and the new book. And
yes, the new book, which is forthcoming. I'm in the middle of editing it right now. You guys, I'll offer it to you guys in early 2019. It's a long road in publishing, but something to look forward to because I think it's going to be really amazing and hopefully really help everyone a lot that reads it. But yeah, this idea of self-acceptance and, you know, body love and body just self-love as we are.
Yeah, and fun, lightness, like fun letting go.
Lightness, letting it pass through, not taking things so seriously, not being so fixated. Mm-hmm. And really that relaxation and that ease is really attractive.
Yes.
And it's very magnetic. And so, yeah, so it's just like letting things be softer.
Yes.
We have some really interesting research that we're going to list in the show notes. If you guys are interested in reading about this and getting, you know, again, it's really just about easefulness, getting out of rigidity, letting yourself eat those foods sometimes, but again, within the umbrella. Mm-hmm. So for me, I keep saying like coconut ice cream or these yummy cookies. Like I don't have the urge to have, you know, like a hamburger
yes.
or a bunch of
Doritos
cheese
or something.
Yeah, or like yeah, some dairy, because that would really, I feel like, take me off. And I think that I would throw up if I eat those foods anyway at this point, because my body's not used to them and I don't want them.
Yes.
But there are amazing options within
Beauty
Detox world, you know, the dairy-free, like coconut ice cream, like all these amazing vegan cookies where you don't even miss those ingredients. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, having fun, but still keeping to the parameters. So we respect our digestion and what we're building with digestion through our SBO probiotics and all our amazing protocols.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm. I know we love that Kaisel cream cheese tea.
Yes.
Awesome, beauties. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, T, for all this great research.
Yeah, I know. This was really fun to research and to look at it. And yeah, it's just such a relief to know, again, what you've said is that progress is not perfection. And it's okay to let go, and feels amazing. So thank you.
Amazing. Thank you, beauties. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right after the break. Unlike some probiotic formulas, which are isolated friendly species that have been removed from their natural environment, our SBO probiotics are totally natural and work together to help bring your gut flora back into balance. The best way to ensure that you never miss a month and therefore never miss out on less bloating, boosting your energy, and many other benefits, please check out our discounted subscription membership. Sign up for your subscription today at shop.kimberlysnyder.com. Hey, beauties, welcome back. I have a very special interview I'm very excited about today. I have Drs. Dean and Aisha Shirzai, who are a unique husband and wife team on the cutting edge of brain science and Alzheimer's prevention. And they are the co-authors of a book called The Alzheimer's Solution. So Drs. Dean and Aisha, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank
you. It's a pleasure to be here, Kimberly.
First of all, I have to say that I love that you guys are life partners and you're sharing your research together and co-author. I mean, you guys are partners in the truest sense, which is so beautiful to see. And I feel like it's pretty rare.
No, it's quite a blessing. We're very happy, you know, our experiences and working together and involving our children. We have a 10 and a 12-year-old daughter and son, respectively, who are also involved in this whole approach towards a better, healthier life and a stronger brain through lifestyle. So it's really exciting. It's a family endeavor.
I love that. And how did you guys get, what was the motivation or the inspiration to get involved in Alzheimer's specifically? Was there, you know, just, it's such a big issue, of course, and brain health is a huge, huge topic, but it's specific. So I wondered if there was a family member or a personal experience or what brought you to it specifically.
You know, it's interesting that you asked that, because that was probably the main reason why Dean and I got to know each other. But, you know, 14 years ago, we both had grandparents who have dementia and who basically had cognitive impairment early in life. And we saw these incredibly lovely matriarchs and role models in the family slowly and gradually lose parts of themselves to the point where they couldn't recognize anyone.
And so
we went through that painful experience. And that intrigued us, and we wanted to study the mind. And then when we both trained in neurology, we realized that Alzheimer's disease was the biggest epidemic that the world had ever seen. It's the costliest disease right now. It costs four times that of the leading cause of death, which is heart disease. And
wow.
It's expected to rise to be, you know, about, it, the cost will rise to $3 trillion by 2050. You know, if we don't do anything about it now, there's really no treatment for it. So all of the energy needs to be spent on understanding it better and preventing it. From our research and our work at Loma Linda University, we found out that it can be prevented.
And day by day, that's being proven. You might have heard that Pfizer just pulled out of treatment of Alzheimer's. And we believe that that might be in the future. And it's not going to be one pill. But reality is prevention is the way that the conversation that we should have. That's what we saw in our work for the last 14 years. That's what we've been doing.
You know, I actually read some research about Parkinson's, which I know is a different, totally different disease, but it was about some studies in the Midwest or studying cities in the Midwest that had higher levels of certain weed killers in the food supply and the water supply. And it was shown to have higher rates of Parkinson's. So I wonder with, you know, that's a theory, is like all these chemicals in the food supply are really damaging the brain. Is that something that you're seeing in Alzheimer's, or tell us what are some of the preventative measures? I imagine food has to be one of them.
Absolutely. We really think that lifestyle and environment has a profound effect. So then, just to separate genetics from environment and lifestyle, we're all genetic beings. There's no doubt that there's genetics involved. Some diseases, the genes drive the disease. Huntington's disease. If you have the gene, if your father had the gene, the child, the son especially, will most likely get it at a certain age. I mean, that's but majority of the chronic diseases, the genes are not, it's not a single gene. It's a multitude of genes that are not even genetics of the disease. They're lifestyle related genes. There are your genes that deal with immune response, your genes that deal with vascular response, the genes that deal with clearing things. So what that means is that that genetics that you have is a range that's given to you, a range of anywhere between 10 to 20 to 30 years where you can get that disease, or even longer. What happens through to you throughout life, the toxins, the food, the level of activity, the level of mental activity, determines how much resilience you will have, how much you can push the genes all the way to the edge of where that can manifest. Mm-hmm. So it's the interplay of mostly the environment for the 90% or more. It's the environment that determines everything. It's the food and lifestyle that determines where the person can get it within that wide range. And that's the way we have to approach it.
So, Dr. Dean, what are some of the recommendations you have? Organic food, or, you know, clean water? Like, what are some of the things that you guys recommend?
I mean, if we simplify it, it's a whole food, plant-based diet.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so whole food meaning that the less processed, the better. And we know why. I mean, things that are processed. I mean, 70% of foods that are put in a package have sugar or some kind of chemical. They're not organic. So that's going to affect you in significantly adverse ways. And that's not soft data. You know, you hear all these nuanced diets and nuanced information. And reality is the data on whole food plant-based diet is 80 years, thousands of papers, robust papers. We just wrote a paper on California teacher study, 144,000 people over decades. That's a robust data. And it keeps coming back. Even the Mediterranean, it's the component of Mediterranean, it's the whole food plant-based that's the most.
Yes. Well, and we know that all these, you know, POPs, these persistent organic pesticides, and all these chemicals really bioaccumulate as you go up the food chain. So when you're eating plant foods, you're just not getting that onslaught of toxicity day in and day out.
And let's talk about that toxicity in animals. So what are the, in fish, we check, how many chemicals do we check? Mercury, lead, and a couple. In reality, in reality, since 1940s, we've added tens of thousands of chemicals into the oceans and into the water. And as it filters up, the things that we don't check are the things that are going to affect us ultimately, things that the chemicals that we don't even check on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. If you can get it in the simplest version, in the simplest plant version, which is organic, non-processed, that's the best way to go. Now, the answer that's going to come to people's mind is, oh, I'm eating this, this, and this. There's no way I can go all the way to plant-based whole food right away. That's failure. I agree. So it should be an incremental, slow habit for habitual direction.
Exactly. We talk a lot here in the community about small, simple steps, changing your morning ritual, having, you know, our signature recipe, the glowing green smoothie, instead of, you know, an egg white omelet, and just sort of starting to build. And that really does help. You know, it helps to bridge that gap between, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? Absolutely. To, oh, I'm doing it little at a time and I feel good and I experience more energy. So it really builds.
Absolutely. In our Alzheimer's prevention program, that is the most important element of success, the incremental steps towards the outcome. And our study showed that. I mean, statistically speaking, we found out that even making small swaps like maybe a lentil soup instead of a, you know, a burger a day makes a huge difference. Adding some fruits instead of pastries and desserts made a big difference. So that gives, that empowers people, and that makes them feel better about themselves, that they're actually doing something that will result in a better brain, better health, less disease.
And that creates the foundation of long-term habits. I mean, the incremental element is not a small matter. The study that just came about walking once a week from Harvard University, once a week, reduced your risk of death by 30%. I mean, something like that is bewildering, but it's true.
With the brain, because of the fatty nature of the brain, and is there something you guys can simplify how much these pesticides and these chemicals are affecting brain health specifically? It just, you know, just it deposits there a lot, or how can we think of it? Specifically with brain health and Alzheimer's.
You're absolutely right. Let's take it from two different directions. First of all, this little 3-pound organ, 2% of the body, consumes 25% of the energy. So it's a machine that's going at a rate that the rest of the body is not ready. I mean, it's working at a completely different level. At the same time, it works like the rest of the body, but it works at a much higher intensity. In doing so, it consumes a lot more. It needs to get rid of a lot of more waste products. It needs to have a perfect immune response. And at the same time, it accumulates all this food and puts it into the different structures of the cells. People say, oh, but the brain doesn't create new cells. And it doesn't have to. It recreates new cell wall. It creates new organelles. So all of that is created from the food you eat, from the toxins that come into your body. And since the brain uses the most blood, the most oxygen, the most nutrient, the most toxins, it's going to actually integrate it into its cellular structures much more. That's what. So this little brain is being overwhelmed by toxins, by chemicals, by sugar, by fats, by bad fats. And we have to be cognizant of that fact.
And, you know, when you were talking about detoxifying, I know that there's a lot of research now about the importance of sleep and detoxifying the brain. Can you guys tell us how that works? I've heard this non-scientific term, but I feel like I hear it a lot, of sludge, like the brain is actually releasing sludge. Can you guys explain what is going on when we sleep?
I completely agree with you. Sleep was ignored by a lot of neuroscientists for a very long time. But, you know, with the recent advances that we have and some of the tools that detect patterns during sleep and, you know, all the other tools that we have, we now know that sleep is one of the most critical detoxification processes that we go through every night. So two things actually happen when we sleep. The number one thing that happens is consolidation of memory. It's like your memories and the information that you gather during the day are placed in the right files and cabinets so that the brain has an easy way of retrieving it when you need it. And sleep does that. And the other process is a detoxification. Mm. When we sleep, there are certain cells that go ahead and get the removal process started of beta amyloid proteins or the bad proteins that accumulate during the day. They get rid of the inflammatory byproducts, the toxic byproducts, and these cells, they go haywire when people don't sleep. Mm. Instead of just getting rid of the toxic products, they actually eat away the normal healthy structures of the brain. And so it's basically like a janitor coming in and not only cleaning up the dirt from the day's work, but essentially ruining the upholstery and the couches and the walls and the whole structure of that building as well.
And since that cleansing process is not just cleansing, it's an incredibly organized process. Getting rid of specific toxins it takes a lot of specific organized action. It actually doesn't even do that job well. Mm-hmm. So now you have accumulation of amyloid and inflammatory product, yet destruction of perfectly good axonal connections. It actually eats away at brain structures. So one night's bad sleep can wreak havoc, not just as far as how you feel, but in the infrastructure of the brain, there is permanent damage left. I'm sorry to say.
Well, what if someone hasn't slept well in the past for whatever reason? Maybe they're eating too close to bed or watching a lot of movies, but now they become aware and they go forward to really pay more attention to their sleep hygiene. Can they reverse some of that damage, or you know, I just don't want anyone to think, oh crap, like I've slept so badly, I'm doomed, you know, like I, please tell us there's.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now I'll throw a lifeline here. So, yeah. So the brain is also incredibly resilient. Now, I'll be honest, if you do this for a long time, if you've done it for, you know, till you're in your 60s and 70s, the damage can be so profound that coming back is you can stop the progression, but retrieval is going to be difficult. So you can stop and slow it down, but it's going to be difficult to regain a tremendous amount of the previous function. But the sooner you start, the brain is also amazingly resilient. I mean, each cell, we have 87 billion to 100 billion neurons, right? Even if you lose billions of neurons, it's not the neurons as much as the connectivity. This is where the brain is different from every other organ. People kind of connect them. They connect the brain or make this similarity to muscle. The biggest muscle can grow 3 to 4 times. Each neuron can make as many as a couple of connections or as many as 20 to 30,000 connections. That's where the resilience comes in. That can be done at any point of life.
And at any age, yeah.
At any age. So, and that can give you protection. You can actually reclaim a lot of the lost or damaged landscape as far as brain landscape is concerned. That's where you can rebuild the brain at any age. And that's where the hope is. That's where we think that if we catch somebody early enough, or even at early stages of dementia or pre-dementia, I think there can be significant reversal of the damage and regain of cognitive function.
Mm. Well, that's great to know. You know, as soon as we know, we hear this podcast or we get inspired, all we can do is go forward and do our best. And, you know, I love how you guys are outlining this in a program with sleep, with diet, with steps. And I know, is this all outlined in your new book, The Alzheimer's Solution?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And by the way, all the profits coming from the book go back to the communities. We have a nonprofit organization called the Healthy Minds Initiative. And we set brain health workshops in the communities and just talking about how to prevent diseases of the brain.
Wow. It's so amazing. What incredible work you guys are doing, because it can prevent so much pain and heartache from, you know, like you guys said, experiencing it with your grandparents. I haven't, knock on wood, experienced something like that yet, but I can imagine it's just incredibly difficult when someone you love so much doesn't remember who you are, or geez, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. It's a pretty devastating disease. Yes. And, you know, thank you for helping us to disperse the message. And we're from the same tribe, and you're doing an amazing job, and we're happy to be connected.
Oh, well, thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for all this amazing information. Everyone, you guys can get more information about Dr. Dean and Aisha on, we're going to link to it in the show notes, but it's teamsherzai.com. That's team SHERZAI.com. We'll also link to their book, The Alzheimer's Solution. And if you or anyone in your family or anyone that you know of has, you know, is interested in learning more about Alzheimer's prevention, which is a huge issue that affects all of us in the community, please share this information, because it could really, really help improve people's lives. So thank you again, Doctor, so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much,
Kimberly. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So inspiring. Thank you. And thank you, beauties, for tuning in today. Sending you guys lots of love, and see you back here on Thursday. Okay, beauties, I will be back with you on Thursday for my Q&A session show, where I answer questions from the Beauty Detox community. To submit your question, please go to KimberlySnyder.com/AskKimberly. Thanks so much, and see you again soon. And always remember, progress, not perfection, as true beauty comes from the inside out.